This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. The three-pack is back. The three-pack is a great value, and the top three uses for the air purifier are to eliminate odors, allergens, and air pollutants. Get the three-pack today at EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word Howie3.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
The Millennial with the Mic is the most listened to midday show in Boston. You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail. Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Get ready, pal.
It's Boston's number one midday show, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Thank you so much for joining us for the second hour on this beautiful Tuesday. We have a lot to give you for the rest of the show, and I'm very thrilled about my next guest. You've heard her before on this program, Kira Davis. She is a managing editor at Red State. She is a wonderful writer and reporter, and she has an exclusive about a story in an Orange County suburb that I think people are going to want to hear about. Kira, thanks so much for taking the time to come on The Grace Curley Show.
Hi, Grace. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back with you.
Kira, this story is unbelievable, and I'm just going to kind of let you set this up for the audience and break down exactly what happened to this first grader in California.
Yeah, so a California first grader here in Southern California, where I live. In fact, full disclosure, this story takes place in my school district, and I'm also running for school board in this school district. So that's how the story came to my attention, but a seven-year-old wanted to draw a picture for her diverse group of friends. Seven-year-old was white. She has lots of different color friends. And Black Lives Matter was in the news. So she drew them a picture that had Black Lives Matter across the top. And then she drew representations of her different colored friends. And it was a really cute little picture. And then underneath Black Lives Matter, she wrote the words, "Any lives." And she gave the picture to her friend, or somehow her friend came into possession of the picture. And then the family of the friend who got the picture allegedly decided that the picture was offensive, complained to the principal, and the principal disciplined the first grader, made her apologize in front of all of her classmates, in front of all of the staff on the school playground, and then forbid her from taking part in any free time art projects after that, and took away her recesses. I'm not sure how many recesses she lost, but she lost at least one recess. The worst part is they never notified this little girl's mother. So she didn't know until she heard about it almost a year later. And then that's when the mother said, I think what happened to my child is wrong. It was an innocent picture. I think what happened was wrong. And so she went to procure legal representation. And now it looks like this case could be a precedent-setting case for parents across the country.
Kira, if people want to look at this story, they can obviously go to redstate.com, but they can also follow you on Twitter at @RealKiraDavis. Something I was kind of blown away with by this is not just the fact that this, and we're calling her Jane for privacy reasons, that this student was disciplined, but kind of the public humiliation aspect that she was made to apologize in front of all of these people for something that, you know, as a seven-year-old, I still remember, you know, when you're in school and you do something wrong and how that sticks with you. And so she really did feel for probably a year that she did something very bad. And maybe that's why she didn't even tell her mom, because not only did the school not tell the mom, but the child didn't tell her mom. And then she found out from another parent. Is that correct?
Yes. As far as we know, that's how everything went down. And you have to understand, the seven-year-old really did not know what she had done wrong. Even after, this is from what I came to understand talking to her mother, even after she came to her mother, she still, you know, and told her the story, she still didn't really understand what she had done wrong. They just told her that what you did was wrong and you need to apologize and you're getting punished, but she didn't understand the politics of Black Lives Matter or any lives matter. She was just drawing a picture. She was just drawing a picture that would represent this idea of Black Lives Matter. And she thought to herself, this is from what I understand from talking to the mother, she thought to herself, well, Black Lives Matter, and also all of the lives of my friends matter, because I have Mexican friends and I have Japanese friends and I have white friends, and they all matter too. So she was just drawing this picture about how everyone matters. She had no concept of what the politics could be perceived as behind that picture. So to this day, I'm not even sure if she understands what she's accused of. She just did what she was told.
Yeah, and you have
to apologize and then to sit on the bench during recess.
And you have a quote here from this child's mother, and it really, it summarizes what you just said, that this little girl has friends. She has brown friends. She has black friends. She has white friends. And she didn't want to exclude anyone. And it really is the innocence of it that makes you really sad about this story, because we're constantly told by the left that children harbor all of these, you know, race prejudices from the moment they're born. And when you see this story of this little girl who's drawing this picture, it's the exact opposite. The mother says, my children see color, as a description. I am trying to raise them the way the world should be, not the way it is. That's how I'm trying to make my personal change. Her best friend is brown, not black, but brown. And she didn't understand why she didn't matter, why her friend didn't matter. I mean, it's really heartbreaking, Kira, when you read it.
It is. And I think that's what makes this story so outrageous. Look, we understand that things are very sensitive right now in the public discourse, and particularly when it comes to public school. And maybe if we were talking about a teenager, a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old, maybe we could talk about motives or intentions. But really what we're talking about is a little girl who was humiliated and punished for the most innocent, not only the most innocent of expressions, but the kind of expression that we would want for our kids to be making, which is that I accept everyone. I love everyone. And whether or not that's an appropriate response to Black Lives Matter or not, whether or not you and I agree on that or disagree, she's seven. She has no concept of the politics behind it. And the fact that it was hidden from the mother for so long is really what makes this outrageous. And I want to add this, Grace. I don't think that it was intentionally hidden from the mom. That's just the impression I get. What I think is that they didn't think it was a big deal, that they just thought, hey, you know what? Whatever, we're just going to do our job here. They didn't think it was a big deal. And there are a lot of people around here who don't think it's a big deal. And I think that that is one of the most egregious things also. And we've been letting that attitude survive in the education realm for far too long. The idea that, oh, well, that doesn't really matter. This doesn't really matter. And it's all been piling up. And now we find ourselves in situations like this.
And I think that that's also part of when you're a young kid, and sometimes teachers or adults, they might say something and they don't understand the impact it has on you when you're 7 or 8 years old and you really take it to heart. I was a very sensitive kid. And if a teacher reprimanded me for something, they might feel like, oh, well, you know, she's going to be fine. She's not going to think about that again. But I would think about it all day. I'd go home and I'd tell my mom, oh, I'm in trouble for this, or I did this wrong. Some kids really take things to heart. And the reason I bring this up here is because there's a really sad, important element to this story, which is it might have not been a big deal to those teachers or to that principal, but this child's behavior did change in a significant way, and her mom noticed it over the course of the year after this incident. Can you explain to the audience what happened?
Yeah, well, Jane, the daughter, is ADHD, and so art and drawing has been therapeutic for her. It's a therapeutic outlet. Her mother says, you never see her without a crayon or a marker or a pencil in her hand. She's always drawing, constantly drawing. Well, one of the punishments that the principal of the school, Jesus Becerra, delivered to this little girl was to prevent her from drawing more in her free time. And so she internalized that and took that home. She stopped drawing at home. And her mom noticed, you know, and she would ask, why aren't you drawing? And the daughter wouldn't really reply. She didn't really have a good answer for it. But when all of this came out, she reapproached her daughter and said, is this the reason why you haven't been drawing so much? And the daughter said, yes, you know, they told me I wasn't really allowed to draw at school and it could be bad. So that's, you know, these things have ripple effects. We're not just talking about this one mom, this one girl, this one incident. These things ripple through a child's life. And this, I do agree with the school that maybe this didn't need to be a big deal. And it probably wouldn't have been a big deal if they had just approached the parents of Jane right away and given them the opportunity to respond and explain. But instead, it was just all covered up, kept under a hat, and then you know what happens when you make something a secret. Secrets rot. They fester. They grow. And now this secret is turning into a lawsuit.
Absolutely. And Kira, really quickly, what was the response? I know that this mother wrote an email, and at first in the story you write how she just kind of went off, and then she took a few hours and she composed a really well thought out letter. What was the response from the school board and from the school committee?
Well, I don't have specifics. Some of the specific emails and text messages that the mother has received and sent out are still being held back by her legal team as a part of this lawsuit. So the suit is pending now. They're about to file. However, they did tell me that the response in the beginning was that she was lying. And then when she went back with texts and emails, then the response was, well, this wasn't a big deal. So the response both times was like, basically, we can't help you. The school board, although there was one school board representative that this mother represented as helpful, she claimed she wasn't able to do anything. The school board wasn't able to do anything. The principal didn't do anything. The only thing that was done was to this little girl, Jane. And everybody else just kind of was able to move on with their lives. And unfortunately, this family just can't move on with their lives. It's had a huge effect on them.
Kira, can you let people know where they can find all of your work and where they can read more about the story?
Yes, please go to redstate.com. You can find the story there. Follow me on Twitter at RealKiraDavis and listen to my podcast. I did a podcast interview with this woman. Her name is Chelsea Boyle and her legal team. And you'll get a lot more details in that podcast. And my podcast is Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis. You can find that wherever you find your podcast. I encourage you to go and listen to that and listen to this woman's story. And if you have a story similar to this, find a lawyer. I think the only way we end this madness, Grace, is if we start making people uncomfortable.
I agree, and I commend you for writing about this, for following up on this story. Kira Davis is excellent, and you really should listen to her podcast. It's a really easy listen. It's entertaining, and it's informative, and I highly encourage everyone to check that out. All right, everyone, we will be right back with your calls. If you want to discuss this, we can, and we will continue to talk about the Biden administration, Elon Musk versus Donald Trump, all this good stuff when we come back. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-Pack is back. We still get asked all the time, does it really work? And it does. It is a miracle worker in this office, Taylor.
The office, at home, in the car, wherever you put it, it's fantastic. It does exactly what it says it does, which is purify the air and get rid of any odors that may not be so pleasant on the nose.
You've got a few odors in that basement of yours that you want to clear out.
I beg your pardon.
I believe you have a cat.
Is
that true?
Yeah, we do have a cat. And the cat does her business downstairs, where cat's business should be done.
And so that's why they have the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, to eliminate that odor. When Taylor wakes up in the morning and he's whipping up some unique breakfast tacos and he wants to get rid of that egg smell, he turns on the Thunderstorm Air Purifier. The possibilities are endless.
Gets rid of linguica odors, too.
It does. If you're a value shopper like Taylor, Paul Rizzo, Dr. Matt, all these people have purchased the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier and they love it, then now is the time for you to hop on this deal. The 3-pack is back. So get the 3-pack today at EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word GRACE3. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code word GRACE3. By the way, shipping is free. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back with your calls. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley is pure Americana.
I'm so off the cuff. I'm so unpredictable. And I have a leather bomber jacket. I'll take your question anyway, kid. An American
girl. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The polka dots.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Which was the worst Biden Latinx gaffe? Joe playing Despacito or Dr. Jill comparing Latinos to breakfast tacos?
I don't think comparing people to food is a great idea in general. I haven't seen it executed very successfully in the past.
I've only seen it executed successfully once.
What would that be?
Vegetable lasagna.
Vegetable lasagna.
Seinfeld?
Oh, no. I don't know that one.
You don't know that one?
No.
I'll have to dig that one up.
Yeah, find that cut for us, Taylor. Yeah, so I'm going to say Dr. Jill. It would seem that she is in a lot of trouble, although Gail King assures us that...
That's not who she is.
It's not who she is. You know, you just don't... You don't know her heart. But I'm going to vote for Dr. B. Nana.
79% say Dr. B.
I have some advice for Dr. B, though. I don't want her to get too down. With the news that her stepson, Hunter, isn't a big fan of hers, he thinks that she is not all that bright. And then this big gaffe, maybe Joe's gaffes are contagious. I have some advice, and I want her to listen up. Si se pueda. Si se pueda. You know who must be loving this today, though? Especially after he got read the riot act from the Mexican president, Joe is definitely loving that he's not in the doghouse.
Si se puede!
Because you know she yells at him behind the scenes every time he makes a mistake.
Oh, did you see those pictures that came out last week? There's like, it was a play in four acts, it was titled. It was just pictures of Jill and Joe talking to each other outside the White House. And he comes up to her smiling, and then she has like this stern finger in his face look. And then he puts his head down as he's being scorned and walks away upset.
He's sad.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Can't you just picture him walking by her today going, not so tough when you're not on your horse, huh, Jill? Look who's feeling sad now. That wasn't a good idea. You're in trouble. There's when there's a husband who gets in trouble a lot or, you know, who's always in the doghouse. They have a special spring in their step when the shoe is on the other foot. And I think that, without a doubt, Jill is taking the headlines today. It's going to be hard to beat. Although, don't rule Joe out just yet. He might be eyeing a bicycle right about now, saying, I need to get back on the cover of the Daily Mail. Just a little update here for everyone about this abortion story. Have you been following this, Taylor, the 10-year-old... It was a big story that was picked up by the mainstream media, but the 10-year-old who needed to get an abortion.
There seems to be nothing to follow.
There's nothing to follow. There's no information. There's no facts about it. But the woman who's been digging into it, Megan Fox, she was on Jesse Waters last night. And also, we now have confirmation from Ohio's Attorney General Dave Yost that there has been no reports of a 10-year-old being raped, including no crime lab results. So the pro-abortion movement was using this story as a, you know, as a reason for why Roe versus Wade being overturned is like the worst thing in the world. And I really love this paragraph. This is also from Red State. This is by Bonchi. Now, some of the left may try to assert that the abortion doctor in Ohio just didn't report the incident to authorities. That dog doesn't hunt, though. Why? Because it is required by law that the rape of a minor be reported to law enforcement if they seek an abortion. So either this abortion doctor who sourced the story is lying or they broke the law. I'll let the defenders of this tale choose which one. And if you haven't really followed this from the beginning, there's another problem with the story as well. And that's that Ohio's heartbeat law does not prohibit a minor who was raped from obtaining an abortion. So if this abortion doctor made up this story, she didn't even do enough research into the law
to know that she could perform the abortion legally.
Exactly, which also makes me kind of question the validity of the story. And this will come to a shock to a lot of people who just cannot believe that members of the left would lie to prove their point.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly this story came about at precisely the correct moment for the Dems' argument.
Oh, yeah. And then she was past the date where you could get an abortion by 3 days. There was a lot of coincidental timing on this story. 844-500-4242. We have a lot of sound to get to in this last half hour before we bring on Toby Leary. And also a New York Times article. It seems like people are starting to turn on Joe pretty quickly. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. We were just talking about this abortion story that's not panning out for Democrats. An abortion doctor said that a 10-year-old girl was raped and had to get an abortion, so she had to cross state lines because she couldn't get one in Ohio. Well, now Ohio's Attorney General Dave Yost is debunking that story with Jesse Waters. I want to play some of this sound, Taylor, before we move on. Can I have cut 17, please? This is Dave Yost.
Not a whisper. And we work closely with we have a decentralized law enforcement system in Ohio. But we have regular contact with prosecutors and local police and sheriffs. Not a whisper anywhere.
Not a whisper of this story from an abortionist. Can I have cut 18, please?
My office runs the state crime lab. Any case like this, you're going to have a rape kit, you're going to have biological evidence, and you would be looking for DNA analysis, which we do most of the DNA analysis in Ohio. There is no case request for analysis that looks anything like this.
And the part of this, which, you know, at first I was talking to a few reporters about this, and I said, how can they prove that this didn't happen? It's very hard to prove a negative. But here's the issue for this woman. Bernard, I think, Dr. Caitlin Bernard, is that there's two scenarios here. Either it happened and she didn't report it, or she made it up. And both of those scenarios are pretty tough. To wear either of those is going to be tough for her.
Well, you can't just cry rape and have it not reported somewhere, or have somebody not have somebody knock on your door saying, can we have some more information about what happened to you?
Well, also, if she didn't report it, she's a doctor. I mean, she could lose her license. That's against the law. This is cut 19, please.
The doctor in Indiana isn't in our jurisdiction, obviously. We don't know who the originating doctor in Ohio was, if they even exist. But the bottom line is, it is a crime if you're a mandated reporter to fail to report.
And cut 20, please.
It's also the fact that in Ohio, the rape of a 10-year-old means life in prison. I know our prosecutors and cops in this state. There's not one of them that wouldn't be turning over every rock in their jurisdiction if they had the slightest hint that this had occurred.
Again, from Bonchi. So either the abortion doctor who sourced the story is lying or they broke the law. I'll let the defenders of this tale choose which one. I have a feeling this tale that's been in the Washington Post, that's been all over. If you type it into Google, there's hundreds of thousands of search results because internationally this just exploded. I have a feeling it's going to go away. In the same way that all these outlets that refer to Joe Biden as a 79-year-old, someone on social media pointed out, they're going to stop referring to his age real quick once he turns 80, once he hits the big 80. But they like the 79-year-old thing because they think it keeps him like youthful, which is kind of a sad state of affairs when you really think of it. All right. Now, speaking of Joe Biden, I want to turn now to 2024 because there's a lot of talk about this, especially from the mainstream media. Can I have a little bit of journalism in the news, please, Taylor? This is journalism in the news.
And now, news.
Very fake news.
I see a lot of excellent journalism being done.
Give me the press.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
How can you ask a question when you don't know the press?
He said that journalists make up stories and make up sources.
As a journalist, I don't really like being the story here.
Very fake news.
And many of your
compatriots had to change their reporting and they had to apologize and they had to correct.
This is a golden age of journalism in a lot of ways.
Mr. Biden, Mr. Biden, what flavor did you get?
News.
So there's no doubt that there's been a shift. I stand by what I've always said, which is I haven't seen the words cognitive decline yet in any of these pieces or in any of these media hits. And until I see those two words, I don't think Biden's time is officially up at the White House. However, we're getting pretty damn close. This is a piece from the New York Times by Michelle Goldberg. Joe Biden is too old to be president again. Now, we have to add in here that she does sugarcoat these issues for Joe. She does mention that a lot of these things are not his fault and that he can't be blamed for all of these things. Nevertheless, she says, I hope he doesn't run again because he's too old. Now, I didn't want Biden to be the Democratic nominee in 2020, partly for ideological reasons, but even more because he seemed too worn out and unfocused. Now, I'm skipping down here. She says, as a recent New York Times Siena College poll found, 64% of Democrats want a different presidential nominee in 2024. This was something I saw a lot last night on the mainstream news outlet channels, including, let's see here, Jake Tapper and his CNN panel. They were citing a different poll, but it was just as damning. This is cut 14.
Nearly two-thirds of Democratic primary voters want a different nominee. Two-thirds. If you break it down by age, 94% of Democratic primary voters under the age of 30, 94% say they don't want Biden. That is a stunning number.
Yes.
he swept his grandchildren, but other than that, I mean, like, who, 94% don't want him, who are, again,
94%
Democrats under the age of 30.
Yeah.
I don't know, even some of his grandkids might not vote for him.
I think the granddaughter who's having her wedding at the White House is definitely a vote in his corner.
Is that the one he kisses on the mouth?
Taylor.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It was a question.
I don't want that visual in my mind, sir. No, I agree with Jake Tapper, though. I think he might have the grandkids as far as, you know, support. But beyond that, I don't think a lot of the youth, is how we would call them, are going to be backing Joe Biden. Now, back to this Michelle Goldberg thing, because it ties into a lot of these cuts I want to play. She writes, Biden has always been given to gaffes, but there is a painful suspense in watching him speak now, like seeing someone wobble on a tightrope. Some of his misspeaking can be explained by the stutter he overcame as a child, but not all. His staff often seems to be keeping him out of view. As the Times reported, he's participated in fewer than half as many news conferences as his recent predecessors. Biden, now, of course, they always have to mention this, Taylor, that there's plenty of reports behind the scenes that he's still sharp as ever. And he's asking questions. He's engaging in, you know, his duties.
How come evidence of that never comes to the front of the scenes?
It doesn't. It's BTS, as they like to say. He likes to keep that away from the audience. But by receding so far into the background, he forfeits the ability to set the public agenda. And then what Ms. Goldberg goes into is how it wouldn't be that hard for Joe Biden to step aside. Because there's no shame in not running for president in your 80s, she tells us. He emerged from semi-retirement to save the country from a second term of Donald Trump. For that, we all owe him a great debt. But now we need someone who can stand up to the still roiling forces of Trumpism. This idea that he can step aside and it won't be that embarrassing, he's just getting older, this is coming up again and again. This is David Axelrod on CNN. Cut 21, I'm sorry.
President Obama was under siege as well at this time in his presidency, and there was hand-wringing and quiet meetings going on as well. But he was also 30 years younger than this president, and that is a concern, the ability to run a rigorous, vigorous campaign and manage the presidency at the same time when he's in his 81st year. And I think that's a legitimate question, and it's one he's going to have to consider when he toes up to the line and makes the final call that he's going to go.
But there's all this conversation about, oh, you know, he doesn't have a lot of support. Look at how 94% of Democrats don't want him to run again. Look how 64% want someone else. All these numbers, these big time numbers about different statistics, different polls. KJP tells us she doesn't listen to the polls. And yet she says she doesn't pay attention to the polls. And listen to this. This is cut 13.
What was the president's response to a new poll from the New York Times today showing that 64% of Democrats say that they would prefer a different candidate in 2024?
And I would also say from that very same poll, there were 92% of Democrats who support this president as well. Look, you know, not to get into you know, politics from here or get into any political analysis. You know, this is not something. You know, there's going to be many polls. They're going to go up or they're going to go down. This is not the thing that we are solely focused on.
Is she getting her talking points from Kamala?
It's going to go up and it's going to go down. The more you know. This reminds me of the Anchorman scene. 60% of the time works every time. Like, how can both of those polls be true at the same time? No one supports him, but also 90% support him.
Well, they have to support him because they're being held hostage by him right now, but you know, given the opportunity, they'd throw him in front of the bus.
In the last paragraph of Michelle Goldberg's piece, she writes, "There are plenty of possibilities. If Vice President Kamala Harris's approval ratings remain underwater, Democrats have a number of charismatic governors and senators they can turn to. Biden said during the 2020 campaign that he wanted to be a bridge to a new generation of Democrats. Soon it will be time to cross it." Here's my question. You hear that cut from Jake Tapper and his panel of nitwits giggling about how no one's supporting Joe Biden. Do you think Joe, if he has any access to a television, if you know if he somehow gets a hold of the remote when someone's going to refill his bowl of ice cream and
hang on, I gotta let the tube warm up.
And he turns to CNN and he sees that. Do you think he's the type of guy who's going to say, you know what? They're right. It's my time to step aside. It's my time to pass the torch.
No, he'd write an op-ed.
Or do you think he's the glass jaw, whiny ass who's going to say, I'm not going anywhere?
It's amazing. I wonder what the press like in all those other places.
He's going to double down. The more they say it might be time for him to move on, the more I think he's going to dig his feet in the sand. And he's
Fort Hood, Texas, 2009, 13 dead, 30 more injured. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, 1918.
How much was he off there?
100 years, Grace.
100 years. All right. So, yeah.
An entire century. Or if you ask Joe, an entire millennia.
You think that's going to warrant any hit pieces from Glenn Kessler? I got to be careful. Sometimes I give Glenn Kessler a tough time and he actually writes the fact check and then he lets me know, hey, Grace, I actually wrote this fact check, so.
Don't say his name three times in a row.
No. 844-500-4242. We'll take your calls on this when we come back. And also, just a side note here in case anyone wants to weigh in on this aspect of it, Elon Musk and Trump are going back and forth now because Elon Musk is saying what a lot of people are thinking, that maybe it would be easier if Ron DeSantis were the nominee for Republicans and he could sail into victory without as much baggage. When I mention this on the air, I get these emails from this guy who he must listen all the time because he says, Grace, I don't think Donald Trump's going to be happy to hear you talking like this. You're betraying Donald Trump. They're really creepy emails. And I'm just stating what I've been hearing from friends, from family, from coworkers, that it might be easier for Ron DeSantis to win than it would be for Donald Trump. Don't come after me. I don't need like the creepy letters with all the magazine cutouts from the serial killers. I'm just pointing it out. Ronnie, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Hey, thanks, Grace. Always a pleasure to talk with you. I think there's a 0.0 chance that Joe Biden runs again. He has failed so spectacularly and completely and rapidly that I have no doubt he's already been delivered the message, just like Hoffa was delivered the message in The Irishman. It's what it is, Joe. I'm sure he's already been told that, Grace. It's what it is. And if he even thinks of trying to oppose the Democrat power brokers. Hunter Biden will spend the rest of his life in jail. He's going, Grace. He's already been told, and he can fight it, but he's out. He's just failed way too spectacularly.
Yeah, and Ronnie, something you're pointing out is also in this piece, Biden's Democratic critics come from different places on the political spectrum. Some are infuriated by his centrism, others worried by his listlessness. So you have, and I've said this before, you have all these people who are angry at Biden for all different reasons. Some people are mad at him that he hasn't gone far to the left enough. Some people are mad that he took this as a mandate to transform the country when they just wanted him to come in and, you know, stay off of Twitter like the last guy, Donald J. Trump. And so you have all these people who are unhappy for a multitude of reasons. It's going to be very interesting to watch. Thank you for the call, Ronnie. We'll be right back with more of your calls. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potatoes.
You'll get nothing and like it.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
I have four shotguns. Two are mine and two are my deceased son's. They're locked up. Lock and key.
I can't say the same about Hunter's gun, though. That was not locked up. That was left across the street from a high school in a trash can. Joe, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Grace. Do you remember the theme to Clown Joey's inauguration? There was a theme word.
Unity?
Yes, unity. He wanted to unify the country, and he has, because there's too much partisanship. And he's got Republicans and Democrats to agree that he shouldn't be president.
It is. It's amazing. I wrote my Herald piece on that over the weekend, Joe, so I'm glad you gave me a free plug. It's absolutely true. He has unified people in the sense that everyone can agree that this is not what we wanted. Even far left radicals are not happy with him. And of course, regular people who have to, you know, pay their taxes and go to work every day and fill up their gas tanks aren't happy with him either. Another Joe on the line. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Grace. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. We all know how corrupt the Biden family is, and more comes out every day. But he's not going anywhere until he secures the safety from his family being prosecuted for their crimes. I don't know if it's through pardons or whatever, but, you know, he's not going to allow to be fluttering in the wind when he leaves office.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he's nothing if not loyal to his crime family. And a lot of people think that's why he ran in the first place. Because I could never understand that, why Jill would let him run unless it was for a layer of protection. And if anyone watched Tucker's monologue last night about Hunter's connections to China and Jim's connections to China and the big guy's connections to China, it's mind-blowing stuff. I mean, it really is breathtaking just how corrupt this family has been and how they're using their influence to profit off of all of us and to profit off of their positions. 844-500-4242. Thanks for the calls. We got Toby Leary on the line. He's going to take all of your questions in 2-Way Tuesday coming up next. So get ready, get on the lines. It's 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.